Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's Friday, August 5th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Guardians get shut down by Justin Verlander and the Astros on Thursday night. Four rookies in the lineup for Cleveland, and Verlander takes full advantage of that, dominating the Guardians lineup. And really, Cleveland was just not able to get anything going offensively. And another just... A typical Zach Plesac outing, I guess, where, you know, he's battling and he's fighting. He's got a lot of traffic, a lot of walks. But, you know, you look up and they had, at one point, had 10 base runners, but only one run.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, I mean, faced 18 batters in the first three innings, Joe. He strands fives, gives up two hits. And then they load the bases again in the third. He finally gives up a run, but by that time his pitch count is over 70, and you know, and there's no way he gets, you know, it was a miracle he got as deep into the game as he did. And this guy just he looks lost to me, Joe. He needs to I don't know if they need to option him or something. You know, they need to. He needs to regroup somewhere.
It's a combination of he's not hitting his spots. He's not locating his pitches like he needs to. And he's not giving up hard contact. He's not giving up a lot of, you know, deep drives or barreled balls. But the balls that the opponents are putting in play just seem to find every little hole or every little miscue by the defense. And then it snowballs. You can tell with the expression on his face that he knows one thing's going to lead to another. You know, Jose Ramirez, who is as good a defender at third base in the American League as you're going to find, you know, always seems to make a mistake when Zach Plesac's on the mound. And what's Plesac going to do? You're going to throw Jose under the bus? You can't do that. Yeah. The seeing eye singles find their way up the middle. Andres Jimenez makes a diving stop on one, but it keeps it from going in the outfield, but it's still a base hit. There are so many examples of those over Zach Plesac's last dozen starts that's what this is. We've arrived at. We've arrived at this point where Plesac has no confidence in his teammates. He has no confidence in himself. And you can just tell by his body language.
Yeah, if you know, I wish they could just have like a 10-day vacation DL where you could send a guy on vacation, have him sit on a beach in Hawaii or something, and just try to forget what happened. Joe, this guy hasn't won since June 5th. He is 0-6 in his last eight starts. I mean, it's just. And like you said, the snowball is rolling down the hill. There's no stopping this thing.
Yeah, I think more than a vacation, maybe he needs like, back in, what was it, 2016 with Larry Napoli, he needs one of those seances or some sort of ceremony, something to
with Jan Gomes when they, and then he went out and separated his shoulder against the Twins.
you need to think outside of the traditional. You know, because everything is mechanically, he's there. It's not like he's doing something wrong on the mound. He's just not hitting his spots. He's not, finishing off batters. He'll get to two strikes and the guy will get a hit or drop something in somewhere. It's everything that can go wrong for Zach Plesac. It usually finds a way to happen.
Yeah, and he didn't help himself last night. He walks five guys. You know, I mean, he just – It's a tough lineup to face, and they have, you know, had their way with him this year. They're 2-0 against Zach with an 11.00 ERA. I mean, they've just 11 runs in 9 innings. They've kind of beat him up. They've done that to a lot of pitchers too, the Astros.
Yeah, and it doesn't help when he gets the lowest amount of run support in the American League. You look up, he's averaging well under 2 runs of support per game. Something ridiculous, like over his last 11 starts, he's gotten 1 or fewer runs. It's really just sort of a mental block right now, where he knows going out he has to be perfect, and when he's not, you know, things get worse and worse. The lineup that they rolled out there had four rookies. You had Will Benson starting in center field, making his first major league start. Nolan Jones in right field. Tyler Freeman was on the infield. And then Stephen Kwan obviously in left. But should we expect more lineups like this for the rest of the way out from Terry Francona, with, you know, almost half of the guys on the team are rookies?
Yeah, you've got 6 rookies on the 26-man roster right now. And, you know, those 4 rookies last night, Joe, went 0-for-9 with 4 strikeouts against Verlander. I mean, Verlander had to be, he had to be loving that. And, when he took a look at that lineup, I mean, it's just, you know, that's like what Francona has said: we're sending boys against men, you know, a lot of times this year. And that was a classic example of it last night. Verlander, a 2-time Cy Young winner, MVP, 39 years old, against Freeman, Benson, Jones, and Kwan.
Yeah, and in spite of that, with Minnesota losing in Toronto, with Chicago losing, you're still right where you were in the AL Central race. You're a game back. This is a team that has an opportunity to win a division title, and yet you're still rolling four rookies out there in a lineup. There's a scenario. I think there's a situation. I could project a time, maybe by the end of this season, where you're starting all rookies and maybe Jose Ramirez in a lineup. If after September you call up a Bo Naylor or a Brian Labastida to catch, it's a possibility that you could do that. And what kind of message does that send to the team, where the division is right there for the taking, and you're sticking to your plan of, we need to see these guys?
Yeah, I think it's a tough message to sell, you know, but it's kind of the message they've had, you know, since day one. You know, we're going to develop, we're going to try to win at the same time. We've seen this, you know, we've seen these, you know, we've seen Cleveland do this, you know, year after year. It's just a fine line to walk, Joe, and it's a difficult one. And I think, you see, you know, the White Sox, the Twins, and the Guardians all bunched together now. But I think, you know, pretty soon one of these teams is going to separate themselves. And it's going to be, I think the Guardians are going to be in a tough spot to do that. You know, their pitching is struggling, and the lineup, you know, is, we've seen this lineup. It's kind of, it hasn't changed its MO. It's still a feast or famine lineup. And I just don't know if you can win, you know, if you can win a division with this many rookies. I just don't know. And you got to play them, right? They're up here.
Right.
You don't want to sit them.
Right. The message that you're sending to guys like Jose Ramirez and Shane Bieber, who, you know, this is a year of their prime. You signed Jose Ramirez to the contract extension. He's given you a first half that was out of this world in terms of numbers. Shane Bieber, you're basically on a clock until he becomes a free agent. You're in pretty much the same situation you were in with Francisco Lindor. What's the message that you send to those guys, that you're basically wasting a year of your prime of having them, you know, trying to find out what rookies you're going to have for your future when they want to win now?
Yeah, it's That's the age old problem, you know, especially when you don't make a move at the deadline. We have a chance to help the team and you choose not to. You know, you, I guess you choose, you know, the deal you wanted, the deals you wanted to make didn't, you know, reach fruition. And, you know, you say we like the team we have right now. We're going to move forward with that. And, you know, I guess, you know, Bieber and Ramirez have to buy in and, you know, kind of move forward. But it would certainly, I think it would have helped if they added a guy or two, if they added a hitter or you know, at least, you know, made an effort to improve this roster and give those guys in the clubhouse a feeling that, hey, the front office believes we can win this thing.
Yeah, Bieber after the game on Wednesday. Yeah, after the game on Wednesday night, Bieber basically spoke the words, but didn't sound like he was buying them. You know, he said, you know, the front office believes in the guys that we have here, and we believe in them. But you could tell he wanted more. He wanted some sort of move to be made. You know, without putting words in his mouth, it just sort of looked expression wise that. You know, he was disappointed that a trade deadline move wasn't made. So we'll see how that plays out. And you know, you've only got Bieber for a limited time. I really don't think that he's going to be sticking around much past his free agency, not going to be signing a long-term deal if he hasn't already. As far as the guys who are going to be here, Stephen Kwan extended his hitting streak late in the game last night. He is now at, what, 18 games? As far as his hitting streak, challenging Michael Brantley for the Guardians franchise rookie record of 19, he goes for tonight. Brantley was 2010, he hit 19 straight games. Kwan looking to do the same tonight against the Astros.
Yeah, just, you know, Kwan goes 0-for-3 against Verlander, strikes out in the first inning, and but still, you know, in the eighth inning, still, you know, bounces one through the middle to keep that streak going. You know, that was probably the silver lining of last night's game. You know, there wasn't too much else going on there. And he's really, you know, he's fun to watch, Joe. You know, we've talked about him. He kind of reminds some people of Ichiro, you know, the swing and stuff. I don't know if he's as strong as Ichiro, but, you know, he certainly makes contact. He runs well. And we're seeing, you know, during this streak, we're seeing the whole package that he has to offer.
Yeah, don't forget, you know, we first saw Ichiro when he was later in his career. He had played a few seasons in Japan and came over, so he had time to develop that sort of strength and a little bit of power. Maybe if you give Stephen Kwan a few years, he puts on a little bit more muscle and is able to drive a ball the way that Ichiro was. You know, it's not like either of them are big, huge build guys. But maybe he fills out a little bit. You don't want him to lose any speed or flexibility, but certainly looks like he's taken to that left field spot and he's playing well out there. And the leadoff spot, obviously, he's really, you know, sort of generating the offense for Cleveland lately. Go ahead.
Do you think, Joe, is he the leadoff hitter from, you know, probably from here on out, but is he the leadoff hitter next year or do they go back to Straw? You know, that's going to be an interesting situation.
I mean, I think Straw's pretty comfortable down there in the ninth spot. Plus you can flip the lineup over a little faster if you've got him down there. Did you sign Straw to that contract extension thinking he would be your nine hitter? Probably not, but it's more about productivity right now than it is about, you know, what you envisioned a guy doing. If they continue hitting the way that they're both hitting or even improve over the last 2 months of the season, yeah, I see them staying right where they are.
Yeah, I think he's earned that. I think Kwan has earned that leadoff spot. I mean, he's certainly kind of a dynamic hitter, sets the tone for the rest of the lineup.
And the way that Tito talks about him, you can tell he has an eye on the future in terms of, you know, what he's thinking about his development. So, I don't see a reason why Kwan, you know, wouldn't be in that leadoff spot, at least for the foreseeable future. We talked about we talked about the pitching rotation and the struggles that we've had here. Friday night, we get to see the next step, the next man up. Hunter Gaddis, the big right-hander, is going to get the call from AAA. He'll come up and make the start against Houston. Boy, what an introduction to the major leagues for your debut. You get to face the Astros with only two AAA starts under your belt. Hunter Gaddis, 6'6", 260 pounds from Georgia State, a 2019 fifth-round selection. He started out in Akron this season and dominated in Akron. I saw him pitch at the Rubber Ducks, and in the game that I saw, I think he retired 8 of the first 9 batters he faced, and then he walked like 5 guys. He struck out 8 of the first 9 outs that he recorded were via strikeout, and he walked like 5 guys in that outing. But he can dominate a team. He did so at AAA in 2 starts there. He was 1-0, had a 1.76 ERA. I'm sorry, a 176 batting average, a 2.14 ERA. And Hunter Gaddis is going to be the 13th Guardians player to make his major league debut tonight against the Astros.
Yeah, it's going to be Joe, we've seen this how many times? The players' parents are in the stands. You know, Bally Sports, Great Lakes will show up, shot of him jumping up and down when he takes a mound. You know, and like we were talking about yesterday, you know, these guys go through the same rituals. You know, parents come, they get souvenirs from their first game. You know, you go on from there. It's a day to remember. But I thought, you know, it's interesting the way this came about. Because, you know, originally they were going to go with the, you know, the bullpen game, you know, Brian Shaw and Kirk McCarty that, you know, kind of beat Boston and beat Tampa Bay. They came away with wins out of those two games. But, you know, Shaw and McCarty were both needed last night to finish a game against Houston. So, you know, you kind of flip, I don't know if they flip a coin or they just go with Gaddis. And, you know, you bring him up and it said, big boy, go get him.
Yeah, it probably had. I believe Connor Pilkington was in line to be able to come up and start, but they decided instead of going with Pilkington, they went with Gaddis. Other option would have been maybe a Xavion Curry if he was in line in terms of a days of rest or whatever. Both of those guys have been pitching well at AAA. Gaddis, I don't know. I'm curious to ask Tito what the reports were from Andy Tracy on Hunter Gaddis and what, you know, made them sort of, you know, pivot and decide to go with him. Is that, you know, they're in the middle of the game last night. They decide between Tito and Carl Willis, they decide, okay, let's go with Shaw, let's go with McCarty for 3 innings to finish out, knowing that if they do that, they have to, you know, make a job, make a move or something. He says, you know, Tito says it's, you know, someone has to lose a job if we do that. And it was McCarty. They talked to him. They sent him down. They optioned him. But now you also have to make a move on the 40-man roster. You also have to clear a spot to get Gaddis up to Cleveland. You know, maybe an Anthony Castro is somebody that they decide to DFA, you know, for the second time this year. It all depends. There's a bunch of little moves, a little wiggle room that they can create for themselves. But in terms of starting the clock on Gaddis, yeah, it's time to go and it's time to show him, you know, what he's got.
Yeah, it's always kind of exciting to see somebody make his big league debut. You never know exactly what's going to happen. You know, sometimes a guy can, you know, just pitch lights out. Other times, I remember when Greg Swindell came up and made his big league debut against Boston, and it was like 28-3 after the game ended up. He pitched like 3 innings and was gone. And, you know, so you really never know what it's going to be, what the outcome is going to be. But it's always kind of exciting. There's, you know, there's a buzz in the air when you know, a rookie is making his first start, and you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, Swindell was doing that off of a college season. He came right out of college, didn't he?
Well, he came up from double A, I think, or maybe A ball. I think he made about 3 or 4 starts at I wanted to say I think it was double A.
But that was after his college season had ended, right?
Yeah, pretty sure.
Same year, yeah.
Yeah, right. So, they had pitched him like they killed him in Texas.
Exactly. That was the point I'm making is, you know, he's coming off a full college season. Then he goes and makes some minor league starts, and then you call him up to the majors, and it's like, whoa.
Yeah, they don't even do that. I mean, the Guardians, they don't let any of their draft picks pitch the same year they're drafted. All these guys will go to Arizona and work out and maybe, you know, play some inter-squad games, but they don't go out into the league, you know, into affiliates.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And like you said, there will be a buzz, you know, with Gattis making his major league debut, but we'll see how that goes. There are patterns that we've noticed. You know, 13 times this year, guys have come up and made their debuts. And, you know, if they get a hit in their debut, or if they, you know, get a win or a bunch of strikeouts, you know, they give them the beer shower in the locker room afterwards. If the pitcher gets his first win, and it's interesting the patterns that they fall into. Like you said, you know, the TV crew shows the family in the stands after the game. The players usually out on the field. We watched Tyler Freeman after his major league debut, had a whole group. There were 20, 25 people out there on the field. And the grounds crew, Brandon Kanky, was very adamant about watering the field while Freeman's family was still out there taking pictures. And I've actually got a couple of photos of it. It's Freeman and his family standing there taking photos and hugging and talking. And the grounds crew very obviously and impatiently waiting, holding the hose, like very close. And every time one of the Freeman family group would walk off the grass, Kanky and his crew would water the spot that they were in. And as like trying to send an obvious message, hey, get off my lawn. It was really kind of funny. And then over on the other side of the field, Tommy Herman, the starting pitcher for the Diamondbacks that same day, who had also made his major league debut, was on the field with his family, and the crew was on the other side of the field at the same time, watering him off the field. It was just really an impatient scene, and I took some photos of it. It was kind of funny to watch. I would probably get in trouble if I posted a story about it, just as a note maybe, but it was interesting. I'll have to ask Tyler in the clubhouse today what he thought about that. All right, tonight, so we've got Hunter Gattis. We've got Framber Valdez going for the Astros. I wonder if Framber remembers the 10-pitch, there was 11-pitch, 12-pitch at-bat by Jose Ramirez in Houston that resulted in a home run against him earlier this season. I wonder what that matchup's going to look like at the beginning of the game today.
Yeah, that'll be exciting. You know, Jose looks like, I think he's got to hit that second gear again. You know, he's kind of been a little idling. So I think if he gets going again, that would really help this ball club. They need a boost.
Yeah, well, the guy didn't get a break during the All-Star break. So maybe maybe he's about ready to kick it into gear. All right, Hoynesy, we'll be back on Monday with another edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We'll talk to you then.
All right, Joe.